welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
All right. Another season complete.
Another one down.
Another season complete. This is the season. What season was it? Four?
Four. It's good when the host doesn't know. It's like, what are we at? I don't fucking know anymore.
It's like, it's 2 a.m.
Yeah.
We're in a rental car, a rental Jeep.
Yeah. Nice call.
Sitting in front of Alex's place in Brooklyn.
Around. Yeah, we just drove all from Upper West East Side or West, wherever we got that diner.
Did a show, went to a diner, we're doing the whole New York thing.
Yep.
It's about 2 a.m.
Apparently diners close early now.
Yeah, New York is finally going to sleep.
Oh, good. It's earned a little nap.
Maybe now L.A. will stay up later. Maybe it'll shift from one coast to another. I was just telling Kylie today that I'm surprised that L.A. is not the city that doesn't sleep because all the light gets trapped under the smog.
Yeah.
It'd be easier to stay up all night there.
Huh.
I don't know.
It's a lot of smog and light.
It's always weird to me coming back to New York after having been away for a while. This time it was almost a year that I'd been away. It's weird in that everything changes so quickly that you feel a lot older.
Yeah.
By being away, when you come back, you're like, oh my God, the years have gone.
Van Winkle's into New York.
Yeah, New York's just changing over and over and over, and everything is new, and you're like, what happened to my memories?
Oh yeah, I walked by on the McDougal Street. There used to be this record store for, 20, 30 years ago, Bleecker Bob's. There were stories about Johnny Thunders from the New York Dolls would go in there, and then no one ever saw him again, stuff like that. And I walk by, and now it's a Thai restaurant. And I'm like, that used to be Bleecker Bob's. And I realize now I'm the old man complaining.
Bleecker Bob's is gone?
Uh-huh.
That's sad.
I'm sure that's a fine restaurant, but it's not, the famed nice record store.
Damn, that's sad.
Yeah. So, it was going to be a yogurt place, and then they backed out of that and went Thai restaurant. So it just, one-upped itself with hipsterness.
Man, this city, I'm glad I left. Once Bleecker Bob's is gone, ugh. I do that all the time. Just make excuses.
There goes the neighborhood. Once Bleecker Bob's is gone.
This place ain't what it once was.
Before you could get your records with a roach inside them, and now Thai food.
Yeah, with a roach inside them.
Yeah. The roach situation's still not better. But
so what's been going on with you?
Well, things are good. I'm doing shows. I'm about to put out the web series for real. We're just about done editing the third episode, and that's all there's going to be because my buddy who directed is moving to L.A.
This is still the racist toaster.
I'm my racist toaster,
This racist toaster's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, well, we started it, and then...
It feels like a running bit.
Yeah, it just never gets...
There is no racist toaster web series. This is just something
just
we do
we talk about.
Just to mess with the listeners.
When is this racist toaster coming out? I don't know. Soon. I mean, that toaster is racist.
Oh,
it's
man.
Totally racist.
Now I really wish we had made it up. Because it sounds fake.
Well, now we have to make up another one that's a hoax.
Oh, Alex, what's been going on with you? Oh, the racist toaster thing's really taking a lot.
Yeah, and it's 3 episodes. It took us fucking forever.
Oh, my goodness.
But so for real, they're going to get put out, and we'll probably do a trailer, and then that'll be it. And so I wanted to do more, but he's moving, so.
What did you think of the season?
It was a good one. Shecky Green, Robert Klein, all those guys. It was crazy. Adam Lustig had Aristotle, the connection being they were both bald. And so that's how he gets one of the most famous philosophers of all time.
Connection.
Is they're both bald.
Bald. Yeah. We waited a long time on Aristotle.
Yeah,
huh?
Because I was always going to maybe do it like for somebody else. Like, oh, this guy had a problem with addiction, maybe a moderate lifestyle, and then he'd back at it. And then I'm like, oh, I need a bald guy. Aristotle's bald. There we go.
Who else was on this season? Carl Reiner?
Carl Reiner. Oh, my God. He's 92 and still hilarious.
92,
man,
yeah.
Man, I loved him. Aisha Tyler, who's amazing on Archer. We had Larry Miller.
Was he the first one of the season?
He was the first of the season. Said maybe one of he He really did not like, not that he didn't appreciate, but he really disagreed with the philosopher I gave him with Camus. He's like, this guy's, he's a smart, he's a French, he's wrong, he's very, because Camus was like, nothing matters, and he's like, no, I'm going to heaven, and I'm going to get a lot of hugs when I go.
I like how Larry Miller talks.
Yeah, talks like that, very distinguished. I hit my head outside the bar.
It says, well.
Heaven is full of hugs.
I disagree.
Well, I must say. We're just doing dueling Larry Miller.
I love Larry Miller.
Love him. Reggie Watts and John Cage. John Cage was a crazy one because I don't think I've given you guys too many just a philosopher of weird aesthetic.
I liked that, though.
I liked it, too, yeah, because I took an electronic music course in college, and they brought up John Cage. They're like, hey, you can do a piece where you're playing music, but you're not playing any music. And I was like, then Carl Reiner and Maimonides. Carl Reiner was so good. He's a guy that, I'm very impressed by guys who are that close to death and don't seem to be super worried about it. He's like, I'm going to die. Whatever. I had a good run.
You got to think about it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he was saying he thinks about it all the time. He was so sharp.
Yeah, very sharp.
I'll tell you a quick version of what happened after that.
Okay.
Because I got a call from a blocked number.
Okay.
2 days later, and I answer the phone, and not knowing who it is, blocked number, like I said, and he goes, Danny, it's Carl. And it doesn't hit me that it's Carl Reiner because I'm thinking, why would he call me after the interview?
I don't know if my name
is Carl. So I go, who? He goes, Carl Reiner. You were in my living room 2 days ago. So now I think, let me make a joke. So I go, bald fella? So he starts laughing and he goes, you sat right across from me. I said, it's starting to come back. Okay. And he goes, do you want to come over and play with me and Mel? We'd love to play with you.
Play?
I go, play, yeah.
A play date with two old Jews?
Yeah, man. That's heaven for me.
Of course.
So I said, of course I would. So he says, yeah, we'll have dinner and it'll be nice. So I show up. I bring a bottle of wine. And I get there and Carl's sitting in his chair by himself and the phone rings. He tells me to sit down on the couch. The phone rings and Carl picks it up. He goes, hello? Yes. And then he looks over at me on the couch and he goes, yes, he's sitting here right now. I'm looking at him. He's right here in my living room.
Which are not ominous words at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll see you then. Hangs up. He goes, that was Mel. He's on his way.
Oh, that's a good
sure enough, a few minutes later, the door bursts open. Mel Brooks comes in.
It's good to be a king.
All that Mel Brooks energy.
Everything's so green.
He goes, okay, what's going on? What's for dinner? Who is this? This the guy? Yeah. Yeah. He goes, what, did you drive here from New York? I go, yeah. He says, I noticed your car, New York license plate. He goes, all right, let's eat. So.
Wow.
So we go into the other room, and there's this guy, Larry, who is Carl's publisher, and me, and Mel, and Carl, and that's it. And there's a chef who's in the kitchen making
dinner. Look, you say then that's it, and then you keep adding people. And then there was a dog. I mean, that's not really a person, but he's there. And then there was a guy in the corner. We didn't really know who he was. He looks seedy.
And I brought a bottle of wine, and Mel goes, how much you pay for that wine? I go, $25. Thinking that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And he goes, $25 wine. I'm not drinking that. So he looks at it. He goes,
too high or too low?
No, too low. He goes. He looks at it. He goes, it's a 2012. This isn't going to be good for 5 years. I said, well, I didn't plan on staying that long, but I guess we could do a long dinner, So I get a little laugh off of that. But I think Mel was very skeptical for the first about 20 minutes. He was kind of feeling me out. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if this guy's supposed to be here. And I think I won him over about 20 minutes in when we were talking about jazz. And from that point
I knew
on...
He was a jazz guy.
Oh, yeah.
I know you were. I didn't know he was.
Oh, big time. And from that point on, we were singing. We were laughing. We were telling jokes. He was telling stories. And they were, it was just awesome. 3.5 hours I was there, and it flew by. And I felt like I was with my two oldest friends in the world, and I don't mean old as in old age. I just felt like we'd always been friends. It was a weird thing. We all clicked immediately. Mel told me a great story about Alfred Hitchcock. I asked him, I said, did Hitchcock see High Anxiety? And he goes, see it? He helped me write it. He goes, our offices were on the lot next to each other. And I go, wow, that's fantastic. And I said, what did he think of it? He goes, well, that's actually a good story. And he tells me, he said, he did a private screening for Alfred Hitchcock before the execs got to see it.
Okay.
And
this
was
a raw,
mm-hmm.
ready to go.
He was so nervous the whole time he was watching Hitchcock watch the movie. And he didn't see Hitchcock laugh or crack a smile the whole time.
He's just stone-faced?
Yeah. And okay. He was just getting more and
with
more.
With his big lip out, just, Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, he was like, oh my God, he's not laughing at all. He must be insulted. He doesn't see it as an homage. He sees it as an insult. And, you know, he said, you know, he loved Hitchcock so much and respected him so much. He's like, oh, this is the worst case scenario that it could have gone down this way. And then the movie ends and the credits start to roll. And Mel goes to talk to Hitchcock. But before he gets a chance, Hitchcock leaves.
Oh.
So now the whole night,
so he's just about that all night.
Yeah.
That's great.
The whole night he's just sweaty. He's like, he doesn't even want to show it to the execs now. He doesn't want to put the movie out. And you know what I was thinking when he said this? Hitchcock didn't let him know what he thought.
Yeah.
It's kind of appropriate because he was the master of suspense.
Yeah.
So the next morning he comes into work, the whole morning he doesn't know what to do. In the afternoon a big gift shows up. And it has, he opens it up and it's like, I don't know, some fancy French wine. That it was like aged, like this very old bottle of wine.
It's the first bottle of wine ever. Like,
yeah.
And, old?
And he's got a note that says, have no anxiety about High Anxiety, signed Hitch. And he said he has that note framed still in his office.
That's awesome.
And have no anxiety about High Anxiety. And I said to Mel, how did that bottle of wine stand up against the one I brought here tonight? He goes, yours puts up a fight and loses fucking miserably.
You got Mike spiked by Mel Brooks. You know Alfred Hitchcock had no belly button? It's just a weird fact, I know.
No, that's impossible.
Yeah, well, he wasn't born with that one. The belly button's made by a doctor tying it. They tied it wrong, and they kept trying until it was just gone. So he just had a flat.
No way.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why I remembered that, but I have always. So whenever he comes up, I'm like, dude, I had no belly button. I mean, he's a brilliant filmmaker genius, but what the fuck?
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, I got everything I needed to out of this wrap-up show just from that. I hope I don't sound too tired on here. Do I? Do I sound tired?
I don't think you do. I'm sure I sound a little tired.
I'm making an effort to, like, put my energy into this.
We should do one of those football chest head bumps, and then we'll just be tired and scared.
I'm already too tired. Nah.
We'll just be like, bang, ow. I don't like this.
I'm just trying to raise my energy level as much as I can, because it's 2:08 in the morning. But I don't want people to say, oh, this is a sleepy wrap-up show.
This is one of those 2 a.m. podcasts.
So which was your favorite episode of the season?
I gotta go Carl Reiner. He was my favorite because he's a legend, and he was so funny still, and he did Irish accents.
Yeah.
And and also I was waiting to use Maimonides for a little while because I know that you had read some of him, so I was excited to pull that one out. So that was, I loved all of them, but that was my favorite. And that I gave him a quote that he's like, I want to put that in my next book, the Aldous Huxley quote about memory. I hope he writes that and I see it and I go, that was me. I did that.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, about memory being your own private literature, I think it was. What was your favorite episode?
Well, it was a real thrill being at Carl's. I probably would pick that one or Shecky Green.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
Because I really enjoyed my time with Shecky, and that song is still stuck in my head.
Share orange juice with me.
Kylie, you know, is checking on both of us, which will talk more intelligently, my friend. I hope this interview doesn't take 4 hours. I hope in an hour it ends. What more can I say? What more can I do? I, for one, just met you. You're quite a nice guy. It's plain to see. You shared a bottle of orange juice with me.
Did you share the same bottle, like...
No, we both got different cups of orange juice.
That's good.
What a funny, nice, charming, and talented guy.
That's good. Who was beaten up by Frank Sinatra's goons.
Yeah.
I love he paints him in that story like, no, it was okay. He called him off after they kicked my ass enough. He was a nice guy.
Only beaten by the best.
Yeah. I don't remember what he... I don't remember if he said what he did. Mm-hmm. Probably nothing. He probably just didn't do what Frank wanted exactly, and you got your ass kicked.
I enjoyed Mark Schiff a lot. I enjoyed Larry Miller, like we mentioned, mm-hmm. a lot. Roy Wood Jr. was a good one. I don't know. Paul Provenza. Paul Provenza is always a favorite.
That Green Room show was always so good.
Yeah. I hope they're bringing it back.
Are they talking about bringing it back, or...
I've heard some talk.
Okay, I only saw a few episodes, but I was like, this is really good.
Yeah.
Had that kind of tough crowd vibe where it's just, let's shoot the shit.
Yeah, Paul's a real true blue comedy guy.
Yeah.
So.
He directed The Aristocrats, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love Paul. Sweet guy. Very nice guy.
That's good.
Okay, so we got a email from a fan that I thought was a pretty good one to use for this wrap-up show.
All right. You want me to read it, or we just want to...
Sure. We can read it, and we can go through it, because they asked some questions, and I said, that's really good wrap-up stuff.
Yeah.
So, what do we got?
All right. It would be really cool if you talked about the one-year anniversary, like, how did the whole show get started? Let's. You want to go through it piece by piece?
Sure. Right. Okay. How did the whole show get started?
All right. I'll do it from my perspective. I was waiting to go on stage at a youth hostel in Harlem. Because things are going great. And I got a call from Danny, who I had been working with on the Ralphie May show and all that. And I go, hello? He goes, do you really have a philosophy degree? I was like, how does he know? Yes, but how? And it turned out you had posted on Facebook, does anyone have a philosophy degree? And my friend Angel was like, yeah, Facella does. And you're like, that solves all my problems. I can call him right now.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, let's do this thing. Are you in? I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And here we are.
Yeah, for me, it was I started trying to learn philosophy on my own, and I couldn't get through very much without drifting off with my ADD. And I thought I really need a friend to do this. First of all, I thought about posting on Craigslist.
So you wanted somebody who, with my job skills but also is a rapist? Like,
that's why I didn't do it. I was like, maybe someone on Craigslist is also interested in studying philosophy. And
you would say, does anyone have a philosophy degree? You just get 80 dick pics.
Probably.
The internet's weird.
So then I was like, you know what? I should just ask friends of mine who I know. And I was talking to Matt Kirshen, I think at one of his parties.
I think that's one of them science parties.
Yeah.
British science parties.
Yeah, it's all these very good British science parties. Yes, I'm always going to those. And
very astute parties.
I decided to pitch him learning philosophy with me, but as I did it, I thought it sounded kind of weird.
Yeah.
To just ask someone to learn philosophy with me. Out of the context of work,
I
was like, hey, you want to do this thing, philosophy with me? And then there was like a pause there, and I was thinking, well, this is awkward. You're not supposed to just ask people to learn philosophy.
How about these chips, as a
podcast? It just looks like, as a podcast, maybe? And he's like, oh, yes, I'll do a podcast. Yeah, sure. You've got a philosophy
podcast. It was the pilot episode, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's how I first remember it. And then I was thinking, comics are philosophers. And I've heard the term modern-day philosophers. I heard it when George Carlin died, and Jackie Mason called me up, and he said
he was a modern day philosopher.
He was a modern day philosopher. So from there, I was like, all right, well, that's the name of it, and let's see who else wants to do this. Mm-hmm. And I started asking around, and here we are, going into season 5.
Here we are in a car at 2 a.m.
It's going great.
It's going awesome.
So
it is going pretty good. We're getting sponsors. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I'm happy too.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next question?
All right. How did you get some of the interviews you got?
Oh, there's some good stories, but I don't want to give you all the good ones. But I'll tell you some people I've gotten on the show. See, if you give it away, you can't use it
again. You don't want to use the magician's trick of it.
But some people I've gotten on the show, I've gotten their numbers from other comedians. And they say, oh, you should really get this guy on your show. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Can I... And they... Yeah, here's their number, but don't tell them that I gave it to you.
Just assume we found it somewhere.
Well, where does that leave me? You know, you call up, hey, I don't know you, but I'd love to have you do my podcast. Where'd you get my number? I can't tell you. Okay, goodbye.
I have my ways.
So, yeah, I mean, the people be like, all right, this is suspicious right off the bat.
Yeah.
So what I do is, in those situations, I make up a person that doesn't exist and say that they gave me the number.
I got your number from Jesus.
I won't say who it is, but I have a fake name. And I say, this person gave me the number. And people usually are like, okay. They're not going to question more than that.
That's some guy I met. I don't know.
They go, I guess I know that person. I guess they have my number. I don't know. And we get past it like that. But it's pretty funny because there's always that pause after I say that this fake person.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't want to screw up the person who, you know, is trying to help me get a good interview.
And also you got to make it a vague enough name they don't go, that's not a real person.
Right. You can't be like,
You can't be like, hey, I got your number from Brad Fakeman. it's not going to. Arthur does not exist.
Or Pipplestein or something.
Of the Connecticut does not exist.
That just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Flankerman.
Get your number from Orson Welles.
Roger Flankerman. You know Roger Flankerman?
Yeah, the Flankermans. They used to run the Flank. That's how they got their name. Down by the docks.
Some of them I get because I know the comedians like Bill Burr and Louis Black I've been friendly with. Because
you have a backlog for many years. Like, comical guys who are just loyal.
Yeah, people I've interviewed when I used to run a magazine for a little bit about comedy when I, from the ages of 20 to 23 or 19 to 22, I'm not sure exactly anymore.
Yeah, I remember being in a club and seeing the comical like out that you could take one.
Oh, really?
I think it was the old Comedy Village. It used to be the Boston, but I got there just as it changed, and so there was a stack of them there. I'm like, or it was either that or Stand Up New York. I was like, oh, this is neat.
Yeah, I had them for free in all the comedy clubs here and in Boston.
And then I met you later.
Yeah.
First time I ever saw you was actually you were on the open mic at Stand Up New York. You just dropped in to work on stuff.
Was it good?
Yes.
All right.
And then I was hosting a mic at Comedy Corner, which used to be Sal's Comedy Hole, and then changed. And then you went up that, and you did your the bit that now closes your CD, the Narnia.
Ah.
Yeah, you were working on that.
Oh, so, that's good.
And then I some time in the middle, and then we started talking more. I forget exactly how. But
well, I'm glad it happened.
Me too.
All right. So that I think that answers that question.
Okay.
Some of it is highly scammy and
sometimes I'm just a shyster. The other times I get lucky. What do you want?
Or I know the person.
Yeah. They come to me or I stalk them.
But it's happened on more than one occasion that people have said, "Here, call this person, but don't tell them I gave you the number."
Yeah, that's such a weird way to
it's different people who say that too.
It's such a weird position to put somebody in.
Yeah.
All right. What are some of the philosophies from all the interviews you've done that stick with you and Alex? Let me try one. The one that really I was most interested to give this season was the Albert Camus to Larry Miller, especially because he's such an upbeat guy, and Camus was so not. And if you actually read his stuff, it's actually there is a sort of hopefulness to it of like his whole thing is like we said you know you die so nothing matters, mm-hmm. and that means you just have to live it up for a lot now because you're not going to get more of a chance later, which I think is actually like the bright side of atheism, almost like, you know, it's almost like the John Lennon Imagine way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, on that first glance, this is existentialism. It's a bummer to say, like, oh, the sun's going to explode. Everything's going to be gone. That's right. But so, yeah, I don't know how much I do find myself sometimes going on those gloomy streaks of, like, well, this is all going to be over in 70 years, and then, you know, who cares? But then I have to remember myself, no, live a lot today because of that. So I was really glad I got to bring up a guy like that.
I always think it'd be too depressing if you lived for, like, 300 years.
Yeah, I think the more you live... I think if you actually lived forever, you'd hate it, but...
I wouldn't like it at all. First of all, it's such a hassle to pay, you know,
300 years
rent
of phone bills
for that long. Let's say, fine, you'd own by then. I don't know. So the question for me is always, like, am I the only one who lives forever, or can I have, like,
people
I love live forever, too? And what if those people, we get sick of each other because it's so many years that we wind up hating each other? Mm-hmm. Can I then choose for them to die?
Well, like, I think the question here is, are you going to be a 300-year-old murderer? Because you can make that happen.
I think the human lifespan is perfect.
Pretty much.
I think it shouldn't be any longer than it is.
Yeah, because then after that, it would...
It's just too long.
Boring aside, your quality of life starts to go down. But.
Even now, like when I talk about coming back to New York and how the city has changed a lot, it's too much.
Bleecker Bob's is going to be a Thai restaurant run by robots.
You won't even remember Bleecker Bob's if you're 300 years old.
Oh, yeah, your mind will be gone.
Like, but even if your mind is sharp, like how many memories can you possibly keep pulling up and pulling up?
Yeah. I'd imagine they probably get, as you go older, they probably stick less and less, but I'd imagine you'd have those, because you still have those memories when you're a kid that are pretty burned into there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 300 years from now, those are going to get fuzzy too, so.
It's like, you ever think about that, what if they created a pill and you would never have to sleep anymore?
I don't know.
You'd never get tired?
I don't know, though, because I would like not being tired, because I'm tired all the time, but... Just being up around the clock, I'd imagine I'd get very, you know, Apocalypse Now, doing Tai Chi and breaking the mirror kind of crazy. So it wouldn't probably be good.
There wouldn't be homes anymore. I think it would eliminate the need for people having homes.
But wouldn't we still need shelter, though?
For what?
Elements. Like, just because I don't sleep doesn't mean I enjoy wind.
Okay, but how much of the time do you stay in your place... When you're awake.
Just to be... Yeah, it would greatly... There would be no more bedrooms.
Maybe you'd have, like, areas where people could all go and cook.
Yeah. You would still
their own food.
You think there would be 4 meals if we never slept? We just...
At least.
We would have to add another one?
Do you think that... What if... Here's where it gets really bad. If the pill exists and you never sleep... But they don't improve cell phone batteries. So
you always have to have a charger.
You always have to be charging your phone.
Because you're going to text all through that sleepless night because you're all crazy. I would be crazy. So I assume I would just be texting furiously like, help me, I'm losing my mind.
One of the things that I'm so excited about living a long time for is to see what the hell they could possibly do with an iPhone that they haven't done already. Because I've noticed that all the new models, they're not doing anything pretty much.
Huh. Well, it's probably going to plateau, and then they're going to eat us for fuel, like the Matrix.
What's next? What else does he want to know?
What is the philosophy? Is there any philosophies that have changed your guys' thinking or your view and attitudes toward life?
Who was the one we did with Melissa Villasenora?
That was Vasily Kandinsky. The whole abstract art thing and how you're... Soul is like a piano, and the eyes are like the strings that are being struck, and then the artist is the guy playing the piano. It's very cool.
Something about that episode made me feel a little better about art, because I remember feeling after that talk, and I don't know if it was the philosopher or the talk, but I remember feeling after that everything you do is artistically important, even if the work doesn't live on in the form that you put it out in.
Yeah.
Because it'll influence somebody, and their work will influence somebody, and your work is part of the greater work of the world.
Yeah, it's this kind of, not macro, it's like this big nexus of everything's affecting. It's
the butterfly effect almost.
So
you say something to somebody, and then they say something to somebody, and that guy paints a picture based on the things he's learned in his life that you were a part of, and it continues on down the line.
So you don't actually have to become a famous artist to become immortal through your art.
Yeah.
You just, people might not know that a little part of some painter you've never heard of is really part of what you see when you see a Van Gogh, but he is.
It's the kind of thing where, you know, people get hung up on, if they're artists, they're like, I want to be famous, I want everybody to know. And not that that's a bad impulse, because that's what you should do.
People want you to know their name.
Yeah.
But they didn't even come up with their own name. They don't even think about how important their name is.
But what people forget is that art, and or even just, you know, being a person, is all about now. It's all about relationships. So, you know, even if you're famous, what does that mean? Some guy goes, oh, that guy. Oh, yeah, I know him. And then it's mm-hmm. all about what's going on now. So it doesn't really, I mean, it's probably good that you can reach more people. But if you're not famous, it doesn't mean you're a failure. It just means you're on a smaller scale. I mean, how many, you know, bands that go, oh, well, if you like us, you have to, there's these 8 bands that no one's ever heard of that we can't get enough of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they say the, nobody, only a few people bought the first Velvet Underground record, but every one of them started a band, is what they always say. And then obviously people know it now, but that type of thing.
So yeah, I think that one had an effect on me. How about you?
I was a big fan of the Michel Foucault with Andy Kindler. I thought that was interesting because it was his whole thing was, you know, don't act like history or smaller scale like life is a movie with like a narrative, because then you're boxing it in, and he's like, you just have to look at the facts objectively and not try to put this overarching thing on your life or on history or whatever. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at it, because, you know, we can't really help but do that, but it is something we got to be mindful of too. Because, you know, you think about your life and you go, oh, this happened and that affected this and that meant this, and sometimes, you know, that's true. Some things, we're talking about, you know, everything causing everything else. Sometimes things really do swim into each other like that. Sometimes things just happen and you're trying to make sense of it. But, you know, sometimes it's almost weird, you have to resist your natural urge to try to paint a picture out of it. Sometimes just things happen. And I think it's kind of good for you once in a while to go, well, these things just happen to me. And doesn't mean, just because I can't weave them together doesn't mean they don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the connectivity of everything.
Yeah. Because it does matter. It's all part of you. It's whatever you're doing is every moment you've lived. So just because you can't figure out what the connection is doesn't mean there isn't a connection.
You know, I keep thinking about how life is just this thing that we all just come and experience for a little while.
Yeah.
And I know that that sounds very not profound, but it keeps making me think.
It's a thing that it's thrust upon you and then it is taken from you.
Like, this is a place. This planet is a place.
Mm-hmm.
And we are visiting it. We may exist or not exist before and after the visit.
Yeah.
But basically, we're all just people that are visiting the same place. We're all, like,
stopping through
at the truck stop. Yeah. We're all at the same truck stop and experiencing it and discussing it while we're here. Isn't it strange? Isn't it strange that we all wound up at this truck stop?
And then there's some guy going, do you think there's a guy that, like, controls the truck stop and loves us? And some guy's, no, fuck you. But there might be.
And then there's another guy saying, you think there's other truck stops out there that people get to visit?
And you go, shut up, Larry, you're high.
You think they'll ever come and visit us on this
truck? They're sending us signals, man. They don't want you to know there's other truck stops. I've seen. They came to get me once.
Isn't it weird, though, that there's all these planets around us and they don't supposedly have
life,
people visiting for a little while?
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, we're the only one that had the exact right specifications to survive. But because everything goes on for fucking ever, the chances that there aren't another one is stupid. So there's another Earth somewhere. And then you could even argue with the amount of time we have forever to just continue. They say that, you know, there's the Big Bang, and then there's a theory opposite, which is the Big Crunch, that everything's going to come back and then start over. So you could say not only could there be other worlds, other places, but there could be this whole thing, life, world, billions of years, could just repeat
on a loop, and it could be a little bit different. It could be one hair on Nixon's head is different, or it could be the same, or it could be something else. To an infinite amount of possible worlds, and it's crazy to think about. That depresses me. I'm like, oh, I'm just a shade of a billion Alexes. That's a bummer.
Well, you know, don't let it depress you unless all the Alexes are also struggling with your struggles.
Yeah, they might be really way cooler than I am.
I'd love to think that there's a lot of Danny Lobels out there that are doing really well.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the galaxy, there's a guy doing this podcast. His name is Danny Lobel. He's really racking in the money, man.
Yeah.
He's got all his bills paid.
Late evening. It's not two. He's not tired. He's having a good...
He just put a down payment on a house, that Danny Lobel. He's got no worries. And people love him. He's playing big theaters.
He's playing the Carnegie Garden Dome, and somewhere there's an Alex who's just drowning in puss. Really well for him.
I can't wait for them to get intergalactic Wi-Fi.
So that they can just go, hey, loser, how's it going in Galaxy 817B?
Well, they'll find me on Facebook, and they'll be like, hey, check it out, we found an unsuccessful Danny Lobel. This is crazy.
Finally, we found him. He's the chosen one sent to lead.
This is bizarre. They're all like in some chat room.
They're like, how are you a Lobel and you're not famous? I'm confused.
You know that there's 18 different planets that are exactly like Earth, and they all have a version of you, and they're all much more successful than you.
Really, this is on you at this point. It's yeah. Really, you don't have the... This is an excuse.
But then I'd feel special, too. I'd be like,
because now you got 18 intergalactic travelers paying attention to you.
I ain't a carbon copy like the rest of yous.
I'm just the punk rock galaxy. That's what. You know what I was thinking about the other day as I was wandering around, as I do? I was thinking, you know, I was like, when I die, I gotta, you know... I'm trying to think of what it was like to be old, especially if in, like, the Carl Reiner years. I'm like... Oh, when I die, I have to say goodbye to everything, like air and, you know, records and steak. I have to say goodbye. And then I thought, no, I'm going to die, and, you know, if my beliefs are correct, I'm just going to be nothing. So I don't have to say goodbye to anything. Everything's got to say goodbye to me, which I find almost comforting.
Goodbye, Alex. Goodbye, record.
Oh, yeah, by that time, I'm crazy, so everything's talking to me.
It's not just the toaster anymore.
Starting with the toaster.
Maybe we should be concerned.
Yeah.
Oh, that raised his toaster. I'm still working on that. That's just your way of, like, you know, really, you're just talking to your toaster.
That's my way of saying, please help me, I'm mentally ill.
Yeah, you're one of these people who's aware enough of his mental illness to hide it.
Behind a toaster.
So is that about it?
That's about it. That was all the guy wanted to know.
Ah. Well,
until he asks us again next season.
It's good questions. I guess people feel encouraged to write us questions, and then at the end of next season, if we get that far, hopefully we will.
I think we're going to.
We'll tackle them.
Let's get an anniversary cake.
Yeah.
For our podcast's first birthday. Like it's a child.
Happy 1 year of podcasting.
Happy 1 year, Danny. I'm glad to be aboard, always.
All right, season 5. Here we go.